This is KZSU Stanford. Mystery Playhouse 90.1 will not be aired this week in order to present you a special presentation, The Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man.
It's Spider-Man! Don't let him get away!
The cops! Where did they come from? They're after me! That's close! Filled with such pain. I've got to find that voice.
There he goes up the side of that building. Get a searchlight on.
Can't hang around. The voice is fading, growing weaker.
It's a long way down.
Falling. Must reach the wall. Still time to catch myself. I did it.
Spider-Man, I've come to pick your bone.
The Vulture. What are you doing here? Yours wasn't the voice that called me.
The Vulture perches where he pleases.
Now forget him.
Away, you wall-crawling creep. Spider-Man only harms.
How did you find out about... You mustn't tell. You mustn't.
I'd never tell. The Vulture would never tell.
The Vulture. He vanished. What's going on? Spider! That cry coming from all around me. I must find that voice. Now the lizard. Where did you come from? It wasn't you that called.
The lizard never calls. Wait,
that voice. I mustn't let you keep me from that voice.
Get away!
No! You've always been
insane!
No, don't say that!
No!
Can't you hear it? Calling to me? I have to know!
What does it matter? Spider-Man, you're a loser!
The Green Goblin! It can't be! The Vulture, the Lizard, and now my most fearsome enemy, the only living creature that knows my secret identity?
No one cares, Spider-Man. Or shall you say, Parker? No one cares if you live or die. And today, you die!
He's hurling stun pumpkins. That voice! Must find that voice! No! It isn't true! Have to go! No! Stop! I can't stand it! Must find that voice! I'm coming! I'm coming! Don't go away! Don't leave me! Don't go away! I'm coming! I'm coming!
No, don't go away. I'm coming. No. 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 Oh. Oh. I must have been dreaming. What time is it? The phone. Must answer the phone. Hello?
Peter Parker?
Speaking.
There's a charming lady here who wants to say hello to you.
They have a gun to my head, and I'm supposed to tell you something.
Aunt May. Aunt May, where are you? Are you all right?
Petey, don't interrupt. They said they'd kill me unless I read this exactly as they say. Are you listening?
Yes.
Mystery's Playhouse is sponsored by a...
You're of its work.
Thank you. There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass.
Or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want. Because this is...
Mystery Playhouse. 90.1.
Vampirella, what a scary show we have in store for all the kiddies, isn't we?
Oh, I've already been scared by that weird webbed man, Spider-Man, and those Goonies, the Green Goblin, and the Vulture.
Well, spiders, they frighten me. They drive me batty, I tell you. I get up in the morning, you know, well, actually, I go to bed in the morning, but I get up in the evening for my morning, and I find all these spiderwebs all around my scary.
Creepy, creepy. Well,
one shouldn't be subjected to that sort of thing, especially when they just wake up. However,
that's true.
Let us go over some of the scariness that we have in store for all the kids today. We've got The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Part 1, coming up.
Also Tales from the Hulk.
Ah, and the Spore from the Spider-Man, perhaps, or maybe even the Shadow.
Who knows what all we've got. Good afternoon, kiddies, out there in Radioland. Glad you could join us, the Count and the Vamp.
Why don't we just start it off with one of my favorite characters, though?
Why not? Which would that be?
Who do you think? From Batman!
All right.
Gotham City, Police Commissioner Gordon is worried as he talks over the private bat phone on his desk.
Well, of course I'm upset, Batman. You know the Joker is your archenemy. Ever since he escaped from jail, we've all been hunting him. And the colossal nerve of the villain, sending me a personal message. Yes, that's right. He says that exactly at midnight on Wednesday, 2 days from now, he will kill Judge Parker, the judge who sentenced him to jail. And that neither you nor I will be able to prevent him. I'm taking personal charge of this, Batman, and I want you to come down here right away. Yes, thank you.
At almost the very same moment in a secret hideaway, a report is being made.
The letter was delivered, just like you said, Joker.
Ah, fine. By now, the commissioner must be on the bat phone calling his friend Batman for moral support. I do wish I could have seen his face when he read my letter.
You really think your plan's gonna work?
My plans always work. This time, no one will stop me. The Joker will win this hand.
Days pass swiftly. Working in close collaboration with the police commissioner, Batman and Robin help plan a tight net of security around the house of Judge Parker. Every precaution has been taken, but still, not one inkling of the Joker's diabolical plans has been discovered. Deep beneath the Wayne house, the dynamic duo leap into the mighty Batmobile. Secret exit opens. Batman and Robin are off to face their unknown danger.
Well, Robin, we've done everything we can to prepare for the...
I just wish we had some idea of what the Joker's up to.
We may find out soon enough. Check your belt.
All okay.
Radio.
Yeah. Robin to Police Unit 1. Robin to Police Unit 1.
Unit 1, come in, Robin.
We are in the Batmobile approaching Judge Parker's house.
Very good. All units are in position here at the house. Over.
Over and out. Batman, I still don't think it's a good idea for us to be outside the house.
That's the way the commissioner wants it, Robin. He may be right. After all, the house inside is most secure. They've searched it from top to bottom 3 times today and sealed it off. Any move the Joker makes will have to come from outside, and we've got to be ready for him.
And the judge doesn't want any policemen inside the house either?
That's right. But he has agreed to just let Commissioner Gordon stay inside with him. You and I will be stationed right outside with the first radio unit.
Right. Is that the house?
Yes. There's Detective Hennessy.
Oh, Batman.
Robin.
Hi, Hennessy.
How's it going?
Oh, quite as a mouse so far. We've checked the grounds twice in the last half hour. There isn't a leaf stirring.
And Commissioner Gordon?
He's been inside there with Judge Parker for the past hour. He checks in on the two-way radio every 10 minutes.
Then there's nothing to do now but wait and watch. We don't know where or when he'll strike. But if I know the Joker, he never makes an idle boast. Somehow I have a feeling that he's close by.
Well, Commissioner, I think I won that hand. That makes me 2 up on you. Care for another game?
You're very good at cards, Judge Parker. Here, it's my deal.
Your hands seem to be trembling, Commissioner. Surely I'm the one who should be nervous. Look at the clock. It's almost 12. And as I told you, nothing has happened.
Don't be too sure, Judge Parker. You don't know the Joker the way I do.
No, but I have absolute faith in your department and all the precautions you've taken.
There it is, Judge. 12 o'clock. Still not worried?
Now let's stop talking about it and play.
Your pick of the cards, Judge.
Hey? What are you doing? What? This card I've drawn, it's...
Yes, the Joker. The Joker wins this game. Even you were fooled, Judge Parker.
The Joker.
You see?
What? A rubber mask.
I prepare this mask myself, Judge. Don't you know that I, the Joker, am a master of disguise? Rather a good likeness of the Commissioner, wouldn't you say?
But where is the Commissioner?
Where he can't do any harm. Tied up in the trunk of his car, where I was waiting for him this evening.
And you just walked in here past all the police?
Of course. They also think that I am the Commissioner. Everyone was looking for me inside or outside the house. No one expected me to be in the Commissioner's car. Now, Judge Parker, it's time for my revenge. For all those months I spent in jail because of you.
No, that gun...
Stay where you are, Judge, and don't move. This gun is absolutely silent. It merely shoots a tiny needle of my own special design into your body. But you won't be able to cry out for help. This special poison on this needle will stretch your lips in death into the famous trademark of the Joker, the death grin.
No. Please.
That's right, Judge. Beg me, please.
It's 2 minutes after 12, Batman. The Commissioner was supposed to check in on the radio at 12, but I can't get any answer.
Robin, we better go in. I don't like it.
I've got to stay by the radio. My orders
are... Let's go, Batman.
The door's locked.
It's too heavy to break down. Let's use the window.
Here goes. In there, Robin. Commissioner Gordon, are you all right?
Batman, he's not the commissioner. That's a mask. He's the Joker.
Surprise, Batman. And here's another.
Look out, Batman. His gun. Here, this statue.
My arm.
Nice throw, Robin.
You haven't got me yet, Batman. I still have another surprise for you in my belt.
Look, Batman. He's got a utility belt like ours.
Watch it, Robin.
But my utility belt is full of tricks. Like this.
Sneezing powder.
And this.
Tear gas. Watch it, Judge.
My eyes. My eyes.
And a few smoke pellets, too, gentlemen. What's the matter? Can't you see?
Hey, what's going on in there? We're coming in.
It's all right, NSA. I'm coming out.
Goodbye for now, gentlemen.
Commissioner, what's happened?
It's all right, Hennessy. The judge knocked over a lamp. Give me the keys to your car.
The radio car? But what...
Well, that's an order, Hennessy.
Yeah, yes, sir. Here you are, but...
And don't go inside that room.
Hennessy!
Hennessy, in here, quickly!
Oh, what in the name of...
Where did he go?
The commissioner? He took my car, but what...
That's not the commissioner. It's the Joker in disguise.
The commissioner's in the trunk of his own car. Get him out fast.
Come on, Robin. The Batmobile. After him.
There's the car. Up ahead, Batman.
Right. We're gaining on him, and we'll soon...
Look! The Joker's throwing something out the window of his car.
What? Oh, tires. Blow up.
Those are heavy tacks the Joker threw into the road.
I can't control the car. Robin, use the rocket launcher. Aim for his wheels.
Right. Here goes. Stopped him. He's out of control. He's going off the road.
Yes, and so are we. Almost. There. Now let's go and finish him off, Robin.
Hey, look. He's unconscious. He must have hit his head.
Fine. Saves wear and tear on my fists. Let's tie him up.
Yes, and let's use his utility belt. That's the best thing to do with it. There.
Where? What happened?
We had a few surprises of our own for you, Joker.
But your belt came in handy after all. See?
Oh, my arm. Can't move.
Batman.
Robin.
Good heavens,
How
I've been...
How did you get him?
The Joker? Here he is.
All wrapped up and ready to go.
That fiend. He was hiding in my car. Knocked me out and then... My. He does look like me, doesn't he? Let's take off that mask now, Joker.
Ow!
Sorry the party's over, Joker. But we'll be glad to visit you in jail.
He sure knows how to rub in, you know, a victory. Especially the boy Wonder.
Oh, that Joker was terribly frightening. I found myself liking him.
If I had someone like Robin rubbing in something like, we'll visit you in jail or laughing, I don't know what I'd do.
Kind of a corny kind of a guy, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, but what I don't understand is why people say this sort of stuff encourages violence. I thought, you know, the Joker really had a sense of humor.
Oh, me too. A death grin.
Hey, Judge, beg me, please. That almost broke me up.
Well, it did break me up, Cal, to tell you the truth.
Well, now we've even got more horror, but... From the stars, according to astrology, this is Star Trek at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Oh.
Captain's log, Stardate 5470. The Enterprise is on routine patrol on the outer fringes of Federation territory, facing the intergalactic Gulf. Yet nothing unusual has been encountered. Log concluded.
Captain?
What is it, Mr. Sulu?
I'm picking up all kinds of powerful radiation at extreme detector range.
What kind of radiations, Lieutenant?
I don't know, sir. Some of it's identifiable, and the rest resembles nothing I've ever seen before in my readouts. Check them yourself.
Lieutenant Sulu is quite correct, Captain. The concentration of violent energies is extraordinarily intense. It resembles no natural phenomenon.
Heading, Mr. Sulu?
308, 6 degrees, 000. Range?
Range, Mr. Sulu.
Closing, Captain, but the disturbances are so violent, I can't say for certain. Two centers, possibly more, are involved.
Very well. Change course to intercept. Lieutenant Uhura, sound yellow alert.
Aye, Captain.
Bridge to engineering.
Engineering, Scott here, Captain.
Scotty, we're heading for a violent energy disturbance of as yet unidentified origins. We may have to do some jumping about. Stand by.
Ready back here, sir.
Good. Bridge out.
Range is still considerable, sir.
Full power on the long-range sensors, Mr. Sulu. Wide screen if possible.
Working on it, sir. We're getting something. What the?
Most remarkable.
What is it? I've never seen a ship like that before.
Or of that size.
What have you got, Mr. Spock?
There are two ships, Captain. They are apparently engaged in combat with one another, employing numerous weapons I cannot begin to describe. The forces involved? Each ship is putting out more destructive energy than 100 ships the class of the Enterprise. Yet both ships, while badly scarred, appeared to be intact. Each is at least 60 times our mass.
Captain?
Yes, Uhura.
Sir, both ships are broadcasting on separate frequencies. I can't decipher what they're saying. The universal translator doesn't recognize either language. The words are apparently directed at each other.
Put it on the speakers, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir.
Lower the volume, but keep it on the speakers, Lieutenant. Mr. Spock, how are you coming with identification?
Nothing in records yet, Captain. Still processing.
Uhura, give me a reply frequency.
Ready, Captain.
This is Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise. Who are you? Where do you come from?
What dost thou represent?
The United Federation of Planets and its allied peoples. I repeat, who are you?
I am the Red Worm. 333rd Supercredit of my class, built by the Unified Dray Peoples. There is nothing in my computer banks of a United Federation. Therefore, I must assume you are unneutral.
For God's sake, Jim, confirm that we are neutral.
It has been assumed, Doctor. Didn't you hear?
Yes, but I don't want that thing to forget it. It's the biggest warship I ever saw. Except for the one it's fighting, of course.
What ship? What ship? Identify yourself immediately!
Uhura, can we just do that?
This is a different frequency, Captain. The call is coming from the other ship.
This is James Kirk, commanding the USS Enterprise, United Federation of Planets. We are a neutral.
Impossible! I, renderer of the Nex Empire, have declared that all who are not allied with me are friends of the unmentionable Dray Peoples!
Sorry, but we really are neutral. We have nothing to do with either the Dray Peoples, as you call them, or the Nex Empire. Spock, what have you got on those two stellar civilizations? I've never heard of either of them.
Working on it, Captain.
You must listen to me, or if you...
Signals have faded out, Captain. They appear to have forgotten us already. They're fully occupied trying to destroy each other.
And I have information on both groups.
What is it, Spock? Where are they?
They are no longer anywhere, Captain. According to mythological records, both races have been extinct in our galaxy for over 150,000 years.
And know thou that I shall fight for another 150,000 or 150 million until the last remaining vestige of the blasphemous Nax are eliminated from existence.
Where are your officers? Who am I speaking to? Which member of the crew?
Crew! Officers! We of the Nax carry on for our builders and masters!
No less we of the Dray, Infidel.
make of that, Mr. Spock?
I think there can be no doubt, Captain, as there is nothing in the records to indicate that either race was immortal. We must surmise that the crews of both ships have been dead for at least 150 millennia, and the war has been carried on all this time by the computer minds of these two ships.
Incredible!
Well put, Doctor. Both ships have apparently survived on their own initiative, continuing to carry out the last orders of their living masters, repairing themselves, modifying their own structure, constantly developing new weapons and new defenses, each hunting for a crucial advantage over its opponent. Yet it seems they are evenly matched.
All very interesting, Mr. Spock, but at the moment I'm more concerned about their present course. They keep traveling in the direction they are now. They'll enter densely populated Federation space within a few days. They've elected to regard us as neutral, for now. They may not treat other Federation shipping or Federation worlds so politely. Uhura, give me dual broadcast frequency for both vessels.
Ready, sir.
Enterprise to combatants. Enterprise calling combatants. Listen, you two. You can reduce each other to mesons if you want. But can't you do it somewhere else? You are headed...
A challenge! You would dispute my position?
No, no. Forget what I said. Spock, what are we going to do? These two are so involved with each other, they've lost the ability to trust anyone else. But we have to turn them somehow.
Maybe if we could discover the reason behind the fighting, we could mediate for them, Jim.
Didn't you hear the insults they threw at each other, Bones?
After 150,000 years, Doctor, I doubt that either ship recalls what the war was originally fought over. That's usually the case with most wars which last more than a few months.
Still, we have to do something. Jim, how about taking sides, joining up to help one ship defeat the other?
Too risky, Bones. We know nothing of either the Dray peoples or the Nax Empire. I can't opt for one side blind. Besides, I doubt that the Enterprise would make one bit of difference for either side, considering the kind of energy weapons they're using. I doubt that our phasers and photon torpedoes could so much as irritate either vessel. And it could get the Enterprise blown clear to the Magellanic clouds.
Just the Enterprise, maybe. But suppose we convince them we can call on several thousand ships the size of the Enterprise.
A thought, Doctor. Except that we cannot call on several thousand ships. We cannot even call immediately on three or four.
True, Spock. But they don't know that.
It's worth a try, Bones. Uhura, sound red alert. To the red worm of the Dray peoples. Unless you change your course, you will soon be set upon by thousands of warships of the United Federation of Peoples and will be destroyed. And renderer of the Nax Empire, unless you break off and disengage from this sector, 10,000 cruisers of the UFP will appear to volatilize the last remnant of your empire.
Sacrilegious interloper!
Enemy of its Imperial Majesty! I have been deceived!
Captain, both ships are changing course.
Mr. Sulu, emergency overdrive, warp 8.
With their minor batteries, I might add. However, they regard the threat seriously, it seems. Both vessels are currently in pursuit.
Sulu?
They're not closing, Captain. They're still too busy fighting each other, but we're not pulling away from them either.
Good. I don't want to lose them. Yes. Kirk here. Go ahead, Mr. Scott.
Captain, how long are we going to run at warp 8? We've got full deflector shields up, too. We can't maintain this kind of shielding at this speed for too long.
I know, Scotty. Hang together down there a while longer yet.
We'll do what we can, Captain.
Well, Bones, we got them to change their course. They're headed away from Federation-inhabited worlds now. That still leaves the problem of convincing them to leave us alone.
Well, I don't know what to suggest, Jim. I didn't get that far.
Great. Mr. Spock?
I don't know what to suggest either, Captain. At this point, the crucial issue appears to be whether or not...
A trick! I see through you now. There is no such thing as a United Federation of Planets. It was a low ploy of you, blasphemer, to attempt to fool me into assuming a weaker tactical position.
You are quick, quick, evil monster! Did you truly think to trick me, with such a feeble lie? This United Federation, this tiny fabrication masquerading as an inhabited ship, is but a decoy, manufactured in your own perverted factories. You will pay for that. Die, social misfit!
This
slowing, Captain. We're pulling clear of them.
Of course, Mr. Sulu.
I'm keen. This ship is full speed away from Federation space.
What do you think of that?
Did you hear, Jim? They've decided that the Enterprise is a trick. The Red Worm thinks we're a trick of the Renderer, and the Renderer believes we're a decoy cooked up by the Red Worm.
Each computer has been battling the other for so long, they can no longer trust anything. It is so in all extended wars. Truth is the first casualty and the last wound to heal.
Mr. Sulu, set in a course for Starbase 14.
Aye, sir. Detectors report both ships still heading out toward the galactic rim.
And according to sensors, still fighting with each other as heavily as ever. It is sad, Captain. All that knowledge, all that power, devoted to continuing a war whose cause has long since been forgotten.
What a waste. Sulu, reduce speed to warp back to 5.
There's one thing that bothers me, though, Captain.
What's that, Lieutenant?
What happens if one ship, either the Red Worm or the Renderer, finally does win? Won't it start hunting for someone else to fight? We threatened them both in the name of the Federation. Won't the winner come looking for us?
I wouldn't worry, Lieutenant O'Hara. Both vessels have been in a state of constant warfare for 150,000 of our years, without either side gaining a lethal advantage. I think it's safe to say that they will continue to remain evenly matched for another 150,000 years.
Let's hope so, Mr. Spock. Let's hope so.
Oh, I tell you, let's hope so, Mr. Smack. The best line in that has got to be, die, social misfit, don't you think, Vampirella?
Oh, yes. Such a scary episode of Star Trek, I must say.
It drives up the ghoul-mose on me. I just don't know how to respond to such scariness. And you know what else? We've got more intergalactic terror.
Oh, you're kidding, Count.
Yes, but first we're going to go to Alfred Hitchcock, then back to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Sounds wonderful.
It is, Vampirella. So without further ado, his holy ghoulishness, Alfred.
Hello, Alfred Hitchcock present with another tale of the macabre. Right now I was just trying to teach my fish, piranhas they are, Sersomnus notarii, to kill. These particular specimens cost me an arm and a leg, money-wise that is. Food-wise they seem to be spoiled on goldfish. I've tried rats, mice, chickens, worms, and fingers, but all they ever seem to eat is goldfish. Whatever happened to the good old days where the Amazon River ran red with the blood of their victims? Men, women, and innocent children. They just don't make them like they used to, though. Innocent, that is. But, as I always say, spare the child, spoil the fun. Oh, and I also neglected to mention that it's much more easier to obtain spare children as opposed to spare goldfish. With the world population problem, famine and disease running rampant, it seems the only moral thing to do. That brings me to today's feature, Escape. This episode, adapted from radio's classic era, is entitled Bloodbath. It teaches many things about South Americans, but first, a message from another bloodthirsty character, one native to America, our sponsor.
Escape is brought to you by Primetime Radio of San Jose. Join KZSU every Thursday night at 10:30 for more classic radio theater with Escape.
That's the most frightening part of the show, I can assure you. But there's still plenty to learn, so clean the slime out of your ears and listen up. Oh, you're back. I was addressing the piranha, of course. Well, nevertheless, here's escape. Now look what you made me do.
This is KZSU, Stamford.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you escape! Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Escape, brought to you by your Richfield gasoline dealer and the Richfield Oil Corporation of New York. Marketers of Richfield gasolines with Xylene, Richlube, all-weather motor oil, and other famous petroleum products. Look for the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pump.
To the jungles of South America and a seething tale of terror and violence as told by James Poe in Bloodbath, starring Mr. Vincent Price.
Portaging the rapids and walking the mules in the shallower stretches, we'd managed to get our supplies and equipment more than 1,700 miles up the river. After this, further navigable passage being impossible, we'd traveled by foot, hacking our way through the thick, steaming jungle, coaxing and goading the heavily laden beasts. We'd left the jungle and begun the climb. 11 days later, high in the Andes, we found our objective. We set to work, hard work. And then, on a hazy afternoon in late May, we found it. I'll never forget the scene. Below us, the mountains swung down to the jungle which stretched eastward, far as the eye could see. The peaks above us had cut off the setting sun, and the light had a curious violet quality. The dense, chill wind whispering and gusting set the sparse timber scrubs to trembling and shuddering, and the mules, disdainful of their five strange masters, foraged the cacti and dwarf pine. The instruments were set up and the specimens were at hand, and now, crouched and tense, we leaned forward.
How about it, Hess?
Wait. The tube's got to warm up. Come on, come on.
Wait, will you?
I've waited 5 years for this moment.
500, you mean? 5 million? Come on, Heffy. How about it, Hess?
Mm-hmm. Okay, give him the sample, O'Brien.
Yeah, here. Come on, baby.
Shut up, will you? Here goes. Switch on. Holy cow. Good. Good. It's fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, Hessie. What's the word?
Yeah, Hessie. Give him.
Gentlemen. Gentlemen.
Unless this machine is busted, unless this Geiger counter has forgotten its multiplication table, we have discovered the richest load of uranium ore known to man.
I won't go into the details of how we'd come to locate the ore, because that's a story in itself. Suffice it to say that late in the afternoon of that hazy May day, the five of us, gamblers all, came to the end of our rainbow, found our pot of gold.
The vein runs all the way up the side of the mountain.
Must be worth $1 million bucks.
A million, a billion.
$1 trillion bucks.
Do you boys realize what we've got here?
Sure we do.
We've got the world at our feet. Why, the man who gets the strike registered in his name can be a king. Every country in the world is going to come running up to him with trunks full of money and power.
Ah, you tell him, Hesse.
Power?
Yeah, we'll make the United States the most powerful nation on earth.
Why the United States?
Oh, you wouldn't sell to anybody else, would you?
I'm a businessman, Harris.
You're a fool.
No, no. I'm a businessman.
$1 trillion bucks.
Oh, gents, we've got the world at our feet. Split five ways.
The world at our feet. Split five ways. That night, as I lay huddled under my thin blanket, I wondered what it would be like being a wealthy man. Wondered if it were really true. Wondered how it would affect the others, how it would affect me. In the morning, we were to set off on the long return journey down to the jungle and through the jungle to the launch and down the river to civilization. There, we'd register our claim, purchase, if need be, the land, lease it perhaps from the government. Oh, millionaire. World at our feet. Uranium. Enough to blow up the whole universe. Power.
Harris, wake up.
Wake up, Harris. Oh, good morning, millionaire.
Please, wake up.
Sun's coming up. Hey, where are the others?
They're gone.
Gone?
Yes, Dumont and O'Brien. They took the mules and most of the food and cut out.
When?
How do I know when? Sometime during the night.
But why?
Why? $1 trillion, that's why.
Oh, no.
Once they get down to the jungle, they'll have to travel on foot. It's 10 days' march to the river. If they beat us to the boat, we're stuck with 1,500 miles of jungle between us and safety.
50? Impossible. We'd never make 100.
That's right. We've got to catch them, or we're dead.
We traveled as lightly as possible. It was a risky business, doubly so because O'Brien and Dumont had taken our guns with them. The only weapons we had between us were one long machete and two pocket knives. These would be of little protection against jaguars, bushmasters, tapirs, boa constrictors, and the rest of it. Fortunately, they'd left our number one necessity to survival. They'd forgotten to take our quinine. This and our food was all we carried. The long descent to the jungle was slow going on foot. It was here that we nearly gave up hope. We moved as fast as we could, but we were no match for men who were riding. But we reached the jungle. Then things took a better turn. Here the thick vines and heavy undergrowth was, we knew, almost an impossible hazard for a riding man. And we could see their boot prints mingled with those of the mules. We knew that they were having trouble, too. The animals were afraid of many things in the jungle, would balk suddenly, require careful handling. We pushed ahead as rapidly as possible, battling mosquitoes, fume flies, motucas, and the blood-sucking carpato ticks, and, of course, the jungle itself with its never-ending barrage of razor grasses, needle vines, swamps, bog traps, and so forth. It was hot, stinking hot, and the going was hard, but we had to make it. Travel at night. They'd taken our flashlight. We'd bundle up as best we could, protecting ourselves not from the cold, it was hot and muggy even at dawn, but from the mosquitoes, and as we progressed towards the river area, from the bats. Vampire bats. Ever seen them? They're small, rather fragile-looking little things. By day, they hang, heads down from the trees, wings folded like clusters of rotten fruit. By night, they hunt. They have razor-sharp teeth, bite like the finest steel scalpels. Their object is to break the skin very delicately, start the blood to coming, and then they simply hang on and sit. Without mosquito netting, we had a rough time of it, a sleepless time. But we managed to keep on going. And on the third day...
No use, fellas. We can't make it to the river before them.
We've got to, Luigi. We've got to make it
right, Wayne.
And even if we do catch up, they got the gun.
Huh?
What is something?
Too quiet, quiet. I heard something.
What did you hear?
Gunfire.
Yeah.
Come on. They can't be more than a mile or two ahead. Come on.
We ran through the jungle, following the fresh marks of the animals and the two men.
And a half an hour or so later, we broke into a little clearing, and there was Dumas.
Dumas. Is that shot in the back? Good old sweet guy, that old...
Here, come on. Let's turn him over.
Really been sweating, huh?
Yeah,
it's malaria. See his face? Good old Obi.
And Dumont came down with malaria, probably started to slow him down.
Sweet guy, that Obi.
Come on. Come on, let's go. Hey, they should have remembered the quinine.
I got no sympathy for Dumont.
You know what would be nice?
What?
If that Obi should get malaria now.
Yeah. He'd be helpless.
He'd ask me for quinine. And I'd throw him a stone.
On we went. Now there were no boot marks with the mule tracks. Apparently O'Brien was riding one of the animals. From time to time we'd see a flurry of tracks turned up as though he had had to dismount to tug one of the beasts back onto the trail. We followed the tracks for another 2 days, and then on the sixth day, we found one of the mules.
How you feeling, boy? Huh? Where's your saddle?
He really looks beat. Look at those marks on his flanks.
Vampire bat.
Yeah.
That leaves O'Brien on foot.
Yeah.
Hey, you hear that? It's the launch.
Where did the river?
He's starting the motor. Come on.
Hold on.
It wasn't very far, just a few hundred yards, and the path was strewn with O'Brien's discarded supplies. Quite suddenly, we came out of the jungle and onto a narrow white sandbar, the river. And there, not 30 feet away from us, just drifting off into the deep, dark, fast-moving waters, was O'Brien in the launch. O'Brien!
Look at him. He's like a skeleton.
Obi! Wait for us, Obi!
The launch lurched dizzily as it floated downstream. O'Brien was feeble, sweating, possessed. He had the fever. Had it bad.
Come on, let's collect
him. You can't. This is piranha water.
Cannibal fish. They'll eat you, Hefty.
Yeah.
Hey, Obi! Hey, you know me, Obi? You know pal Hefty. Hey, what do you say, Obi, huh? Huh?
He staggered dizzily about the cockpit trying to start the engine. He was laughing, and he was so weak that he could barely spin the flywheel to the kicker.
Obi! He's left!
Good Lord, he's in the water!
The fish, the piranhas!
They've got him! They've got him!
Oh, look at this! One moment we saw him swimming weakly, his large, fever-ridden eyes turned imploringly toward us, and the next moment he was gone, leaving only a large, red, churning patch on the water. The piranhas are small, rarely more than 12 or 14 inches long, small fish with large, powerful jaws, teeth like broken glass, and an insatiable, maniacal appetite for flesh. The launch, caught by the deep, fast-moving waters, rocked softly this way and that and moved on downstream, away around a bend and out of sight.
The march of science over the years has produced better than ever gasoline for your car. But now science adds one of the greatest gasoline components of all. It's called xylene. Xylene, a super gasoline component, adds two great qualities to gasoline. Xylene gives higher than ever Antinac performance. Xylene means power. Today, every gallon of Richfield gasoline contains xylene. If you want a motor that runs quiet as a whisper, if you want pickup and power to spare, try Richfield gasoline with xylene. Your Richfield dealer offers a choice of two great Richfield gasolines with xylene. Richfield high octane at regular price for the average motor. Or Richfield Ethyl. Ethyl at its best for tip-top results in the highest compression motors. Drive in where you see the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pumps. Get Richfield gasoline with xylene. Xylene, one of the highest Antinac components in gasoline history. And now we return you to...
Escape, starring Vincent Price.
We picked over the supplies O'Brien had left on the shore. There wasn't much we wanted. A gun without ammunition, a few tins of food, a tent and some bedding, cooking equipment, a coil of rope. We loaded these things onto the mule and set off through the jungle, downstream along the river's course. 1,500 miles to civilization. We had it tough. The jungle was thick along the river's bank, and we made little progress. Not more than 5 miles that day, but the next day, we rounded a bend, keeping close to the shore, and there, about a quarter mile below us and nuzzling the opposite shore, grounded on the sand, lay the launch.
Looks shallow enough here.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, but what about the fish?
How deep does it look to you, Harris, with the deepest spot on me?
Oh, I don't know, maybe 2.5 feet, maybe 3.
Most of it's less than that.
I got an idea.
Shoot.
We've got to get across the launch, see? So here's what we do. We throw away everything. There'll be food and water in the launch, see?
Yeah.
Now, you see that little patch of sand in the middle of the river where the bar shows?
Yeah.
We go that way. That's bound to be the shallowest way, see?
How do we go?
On the mule, the three of us.
Ah, you're nuts.
This mule ain't in such bad condition it can't get the three of us across 70 feet of shallow water.
What do you say, Harris?
Why not?
All right, I'll get aboard first. Come on.
Get farther up, Weemsy. You're the lightest.
Yeah. Harris, you get on next. Huh? Hang on to Weemsy. Here. Carry this coil of rope around your neck. We may need it. I've got the machete strapped to my back.
Hey, you set, Weems?
Yeah.
Now hold tight to me, Hess.
Don't worry. If I go, you go.
And if he goes, I go.
So let's hang on, gents. Yeah. Let's really hang on.
As long as he's moving fast, he can't get at his legs. Ain't that right?
He's not showing anything to him but hoops and hair.
Hold his head up, Weems. Don't let him look down.
All set?
Yeah, all set.
All right, here we go. Now, get along. Come on, Helen. Come on, baby.
I felt the mule lurch when he stepped into the water. The sand was softer here than on the shore.
Sand, huh?
Ahead, not 40 feet away, lay the little strip of land. The mule refused to run, couldn't run, and before he'd taken 10 steps, I knew he was too weak to support the three of us. From every direction in the swirling water about us came small, shadowy, dark shapes.
Come on.
The piranha.
Don't stop. Come on, baby.
Come on.
Keep moving, baby. Come on. Move along, baby.
He can't do it.
You gotta do it, baby. Come on,
what about? The piranhas were churning the water about us, and coming in from beyond them were 4 or 5 long, dark shapes, 6 and 7 feet long, thick and wriggling.
Eels, electric eels.
Self-sing them. Get along to the bar.
Get into the sandbar.
Faster, faster. Come on.
Made it.
Sure about electric eels. I can throw a jolt that'll kill a jaguar. Make it yours like a vice.
So, here we are, gentlemen, stuck. Just 30 feet of water between us and the shore. Get across it, and we can get to the launch and the civilization and all the rest.
The three of us are too much for that mule.
Only 30 feet. Why, you could run it in seconds.
You see those little shadows around us in the water?
I see those little shadows around us. You don't have to draw pictures.
Hey.
Oh, here's another bright idea coming up.
As a matter of fact, yeah.
Yeah, hold on to your hat, Harris.
We got the coil of rope.
Yes.
The mule could carry one of us. That mule's not in such bad shape, you know.
Yes.
Try the rope over his bridle. Then one of us pulls him over with him fast. You see, one rides, and then the other two pull him back.
Yeah.
And the next one gets on.
Yeah.
What do you say?
I can't stay here.
It's a natural.
Who goes first?
Me, on account I'm the lightest. I won't tire on someone.
How about it, Harris?
All right.
Well, get going then.
Okay.
Tie that rope to his butt.
I'm doing it.
All right, give me the machete.
What do you want the machete for?
I want it, that's all. Give me.
No. Okay.
All right, now you two get at the end of the spit. So when you pay out the line, you don't get it caught in his leg.
Well, you think of everything.
That's right. I'm a smart boy.
Ready with the line.
You sure it's tied fast to the bridle?
Yeah, I'm sure.
No funny business, Weems. All we gotta do is jerk this rope once while you're over that water and you're done for.
You're a sharp article.
That's right.
But not
sharp enough.
Hey,
Weems, you cut the rope.
Go on, suckers.
The rope.
Our only salvation was cut. And now Weems, grinning and riding, was out into the stream, heading for the shore in safety. He went not 15 feet when one of the long, dark, wriggling shapes made for the mule and got his leg. The mule reared up by his hind legs, the eel clinging to his foot, pumping paralyzing shocks into him. Weems touched his neck with one hand and slapped him on the flank with the flat of the machete with the other. The mule came down and more eels went for his legs. He began to lurch sideways. Weems swung the long steel blade in an arc, barely missing the mule's leg, and connected with one of the eels. Weems stand on end. His other arm released the mule's neck. The arm holding the blade was extended stiffly, still caught in the thick, muscular back of the electric eel. And then the mule reared again, and Weems fell back into the water. The mule, freed of Weems, made the shore and vanished into the jungle. We turned away. No man could watch what was happening to Weems and retain his sanity. And so, there we were. Half an eye on that sand strip which the river was slowly washing away. Night coming, the vampire bats coming, and all about us, the electric eels and the little cannibal fish waiting. There was no moon. There were evil stars, red and yellow. It was a black sky, and against it, blacker shapes, the vampire bats. We waved our arms and kept them off, but again and again during that long and terrible night, they brushed against us, squealing and squeaking, trying to get us. Dark, evil, thirsting bats. A thousand years later came the dawn.
Water's taken a lot of sand away. This thing isn't much bigger than a card table.
Mm.
Look at them. Look at those fish. You think they had enough to eat yesterday?
Mm.
Listen, Harris. No matter what happens now, at least you and I have played it square, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Shake my hand, Harris.
All right.
Because I think I got an idea on how we can get out of here.
What?
Yeah. Look up there.
Yeah.
See that vine hanging down from the big tree?
It's over the water. It must be 15 feet up.
Yeah, but if you were on it, you could do a tarzan to the shore.
The rope?
That's right. Now, if we can just lasso the end of that and pull tight, we'll have enough swing to make it across. Swing like a pendulum, if you follow me. One guy gets on the other's shoulders to swing over to get the start, see? Then when he gets to shore, he fastens a rock and swings the rope back to the other.
That vine will hold. It'll work. It took us 2 hours before we managed to lasso the end of that vine. And then we tested it again and again until we were positive it would hold a man's weight. And then we were ready.
Stand good and steady now, pal. I'm going to go easy on you, but don't shake. If you spill me in that water, I'm a gone guy.
I'm ready.
I'm ready. Good luck. Here.
I felt his feet leave my shoulders, and then he was off, skimming the water with his feet drawn up, and then, miraculously, he was on the shore.
Goodbye! Goodbye!
Yeah!
Like a breeze, huh?
Like a breeze.
Hey, any rocks around there?
Sorry.
Smiled at me and shrugged, and then looked down the stream at the launch. I knew that smile, that $1 trillion smile. It said, so long, sucker.
Don't do it, Hess. Send me the rope.
You're too nice a guy, Harris. You and I would never get along.
You can have it all, Hess. Every scrap of it. Only for the love of mercy, send me the rope.
No, you want some. You wouldn't approve of what I mean to do with it.
Hess!
He stood there laughing at me and shaking his head slowly. But above him, just over his head, was another vine.
thick and mottled, and it was moving. Look out, Hess! Hess!
He didn't understand or didn't hear me. Just stood there, smiling and shaking his head. The boa constrictor dropped heavily and accurately, a thrashing tangle of scaly muscle. The sun was hot, blistering hot. I was alone, all alone, except for the ever-waiting piranhas. Hess's body was hidden by the low, scrubby vines and palmettos. Several hours later, I saw the boa, now gorged, slither lumpily away. I waited, and I waited. From time to time, I thought of stepping out into the stream. It would be over very quickly, I told myself, very quickly. But I couldn't. And then I noticed an odd thing. The current, which had been sweeping the sand away, had shifted slightly. A whim, a miracle. And now new sand from some sunken bar was beginning to pile up between me and the shore, grain by grain, rib by rib. I watched it. And I watched. And I watched. And at 5 o'clock that afternoon, I walked the shore to the lock. And didn't even get my feet wet. Nice where I live. Quiet little streets, nice people, nice kids, nice country. Peaceful, nice peace. I know where there's enough uranium to blow it all to hell. Want it? Just go up the river. Up the river, it's for the taking. Ask Dumont and Obie and Weems and Hess. $1 trillion worth. Enough to give the whole world a bloodbath, yourself included.
Well, as you can see, my piranhas take no pride in their great ancestry. They still eat only goldfish. I think I'll trade them in for electric eels. Perhaps I can lower my power bill at the same time. Now, if I can only think of a nearby lake where I can ditch these specimens. Till next week, however, Alfred Hitchcock present saying farewell. Isn't there a swimming hole down by... right where a lot of children swim? Now, what's the name of that road? I can't remember... no matter. I bet they can breed there. The piranhas, that is, not the children.
Didn't even get his feet wet. Did you hear that, Count? Oh boy, yeah. I enjoyed that story.
I listened.
Oh. Teeth like broken glass, all surrounded by a violet haze. Oh, what a neat story. Oh, that Vincent Price.
I also love that, though. What was that famous line? I know enough uranium that can blow it all out.
What a sense of humor that brings.
I did disagree somewhat with the derogatory description of a vampire. I thought that was rather unnecessary.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit stereotypically derogatory. Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. That hurt my pride, too.
You don't need that sort of stuff.
It's not necessary.
In the age of discrimination.
Yeah, we're in a new age here, I think, of acceptance. Yes.
You know, the longer I live, though, the more the more remains the same, you know? Like I remember back at the turn of the first century? Well, that them were the days they knew how to do things.
You're giving your age away here,
yes,
now,
Tom. Like when they capital punishment, they really did things right back then.
Oh, Count. There we go. What do we got next?
We got Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which will be continued next week as well. Four exciting installments.
Drag the pleasure out, huh?
Yes. It's so scary. But I think it's time that we go on into that vampirella. So at the time of the count, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is the story of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Perhaps the most remarkable, certainly the most successful book ever to come out of the great publishing corporations of Ursa Minor. More popular than the Celestial Home Care Omnibus, better selling than 53 More Things to Do in Zero Gravity, and more controversial than Ulan Khalifid's trilogy of philosophical blockbusters, Where God Went Wrong, Some More of God's Greatest Mistakes, and Who Is This God Person Anyway? And in many of the more relaxed civilizations on the outer eastern rim of the galaxy, the Hitchhiker's Guide has already supplanted the great Encyclopedia Galactica as the standard repository of all knowledge and wisdom, because although it has many omissions, contains much that is apocryphal, or at least wildly inaccurate, it scores over the older, more pedestrian work in two important ways. First, it is slightly cheaper. And second, it has the words, "Don't panic," inscribed in large, friendly letters on the cover. To tell the story of the book, it is best to tell the story of some of the minds behind it. A human from the planet Earth was one of them, though as our story opens, he no more knows his destiny than a tea leaf knows the history of the East India Company. His name is Arthur Dent. He is a 6-foot-tall ape descendant, and someone is trying to drive a bypass through his home.
Come off it, Mr. Dent. You can't win, you know. You can't lie in front of the bulldozers indefinitely.
I'm game. We'll see who rusts first.
I'm afraid you're going to have to accept it. This bypass has got to be built, and it's going to be built. Nothing you can say or
why
do
is it got to be built?
Well, it's... What do you mean? Why has it got to be built? It's a bypass. You've got to build bypasses.
Anyone consider the alternative?
There are no alternatives. You were quite entitled to make any suggestions or protests at the appropriate time.
Appropriate time? The first I knew about it was when a workman arrived at the door yesterday. Oh. I asked him if he'd come to clean the windows, and he said he'd come to demolish the house.
Yes.
He didn't tell me straight away, of course. Oh, no. First he wiped a couple of windows and charged me a fiver, and then he told me...
But, Mr. Dent, the plans have been available in the planning office for the last 9 months.
Yes. I went straight round to find them yesterday afternoon. You hadn't exactly gone out of your way to call much attention to them, had you? I mean, like, actually telling anybody or anything.
The plans were on display.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
Well, that's the display department.
With a torch.
Well, the lights had probably gone.
So are the stairs.
You found the notice, didn't you?
Yes. It was on display in the bottom of a locked filing cabinet, stuck in a disused lavatory with a sign on the door saying, "Beware of the leper."
Mr. Dent!
Hello, yes.
Have you any idea how much damage that bulldozer would suffer if I just let it roll straight over you?
How much?
None at all.
By a strange coincidence, none at all is exactly how much suspicion the ape descendant Arthur Dent had that one of his closest friends was not descended from an ape, but was, in fact, from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse. Arthur Dent's failure to suspect this reflects the care with which his friend blended himself into human society after a fairly shaky start. When he first arrived 15 years ago, the minimal research he had done suggested to him that the name Ford Prefect would be nicely inconspicuous. He will enter our story in 17.2 seconds and say, "Hello, Arthur." The ape descendant will greet him in return. But in deference to a million years of evolution, he will not attempt to pick fleas off him. Earthmen are not proud of their ancestors and never invite them round to dinner.
Hello, Arthur.
Oh, Ford. Hi, how are you?
Fine. Look, are you busy?
Well, I've just got this bulldozer to lie in front of. Otherwise, no, not especially.
Good.
What?
Look, there's a pub down the road. Let's have a pint and we can talk.
Ford, there's a man over there who wants to knock my house down.
Arthur.
The first I knew about Arthur. It was yesterday when a workman
Arthur.
Came round to say he was cleaning the windows. What?
Arthur, just listen to me. I have got to tell you the most important thing you've ever heard. I've got to tell you now, and I've got to tell you in that pub there.
Why?
Because you're going to need a very stiff drink. Just trust me.
But you don't understand.
Arthur.
These
Arthur.
Trying to
Arthur. Me to the end of the earth.
Yes, but how far's that?
About 10 minutes away. Come on, I need a drink.
The Encyclopedia Galactica describes alcohol as a colorless, volatile liquid formed by the fermentation of sugars, and also notes its intoxicating effect on certain carbon-based life forms. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy also mentions alcohol. It says that the best drink in existence is the Pan-Galactic Gargle Blaster, the effect of which is like having your brain smashed out with a slice of lemon wrapped round a large gold brick. The guide also tells you on which planets the best Pan-Galactic Gargle Blasters are mixed, how much you can expect to pay for one, and what voluntary organizations exist to help you rehabilitate. The man who invented this mind-pummeling drink also invented the wisest remark ever made, which was this: never drink more than 2 Pan-Galactic Gargle Blasters unless you are a 30-ton elephant with bronchial pneumonia. His name is Zaphod Beeblebrox, and we shall learn more of his wisdom later.
6 pints of bitter, and quickly, please, the world's about to end.
Oh, yes, sir. Nice weather for it. Gonna watch the match this afternoon, sir?
No, no point.
Foregone conclusion, that, you reckon, sir? Arsenal without a chance?
No, it's just that the world's going to end.
Oh, yes, sir, you said. Lucky escape for Arsenal if it did.
No, not really.
You are, sir. 6 pints.
Right, keep the change.
What, from a fiver? Thank you, sir.
You've only got 7 minutes left to spend it.
Ford, would you please tell me what the hell is going on?
Drink up, you've got 3 pints to get through.
3 at lunchtime?
Time is an illusion. Lunchtime doubly so. Drink up.
Why 3 pints?
Muscle relaxant. You'll need it.
Did I do something wrong today, or has the world always been like this, and I've been too wrapped up in myself to notice?
I'll try to explain. Drink up. How long have we known each other?
5 years, maybe 6. Most of it seemed to make some kind of sense at the time.
All right. How would you react if I said that I'm not from Guildford after all, but from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse?
I don't know. Why, do you think it's the sort of thing you feel you're likely to say?
Drink up. The world's about to end.
It's Thursday. I never could get the hang of Thursdays.
On this particular Thursday, things were moving quietly through the ionosphere many miles above the surface of the planet. Several huge, yellow, slab-like somethings, huge as office blocks, silent as birds, which hung in the air exactly the same way that bricks don't. The planet was almost totally unaware of their presence. They went unnoticed at Goonhilly, they passed over Cape Canaveral without a blip, and Woomera and Jodrell Bank looked straight through them, which was a pity because it was exactly the sort of thing they'd been looking for all these years. Arthur, of course, was totally unaware of them. He was only aware of a sudden, terrible crashing noise.
What's that?
Don't worry, they haven't started yet. It's probably just your house being knocked down.
What?
3 minutes to go.
Damn you and your fairy stories, they're smashing up my home!
Stop, you vandals! You home wreckers! You half-breed!
Arthur, come back! It's pointless!
Hell. Better go after him. Barman, quickly, can you just give me 4 packets of peanuts?
Certainly, sir. There you are, sir. 28 pence.
Keep the change.
Are you serious, sir? I mean, do you really think the world's going to end this afternoon?
Yes, in just over 1 minute and 35 seconds.
Well, isn't there anything we can do?
No, nothing.
Well, I always thought we were meant to lie down or put a paper bag over our head or something.
If you like, yes.
Will that help?
No. Excuse me, I've got to find my friend.
Oh, well then. Last orders, please!
Arthur, don't bother. There isn't time. Get over here. There's only 10 seconds left.
And I'll jump on and I'll carry on jumping them until I get blisters. I can think of something even more unpleasant to do. And then I'll... What the hell is that?
What do you think it is? Quick! You've got to get hold of this rock! Just that is a Bogon Constructor Fleet!
What?
A Bogon Constructor Fleet! I picked up news of their arrival a few hours ago on my subby's the radio!
Lord, I don't think I can cope with any more of this! I think I'll just go and have a little lie down somewhere!
No! Just stay here! Keep calm! And just take hold of...
Be prepared for your attention, please! This is Prosthetnik Fogonjaks of the Galactic Hyperspace Planning Council. As you will no doubt be aware, the plans for the development of the outlying regions of the western spiral arm of the galaxy require the building of a hyperspace express route through your star system, and regrettably, your planet is one of those scheduled for demolition. The process will take slightly less than 2 of your Earth minutes. Thank you very much. Acting all surprised about it. All the planning charts and demolition orders have been on display at your local planning department in Alpha Centauri for 50 of your Earth years. So you've had plenty of time to lodge any formal complaints, but it's far too late to start making a fuss about it now. What do you mean you've never been to Alpha Centauri? Oh, for heaven's sake, mankind, it's only 4 light years away, you know. I'm sorry, but if you can't be bothered to take an interest in local affairs, that's your own lookout. Energize the demolition beams. Oh, I don't know. I'm pathetic, bloody planet. I'm not sympathetic at all.
Keep on passing out. If I asked where the hell we were, would I regret it?
We're safe.
Oh, good.
We're in a small galley cabin in one of the spaceships of the Bogon Constructor Fleet.
Ah, this is obviously some strange usage of the word safe that I wasn't previously aware of.
I'll have a look for the light.
All right. How did we get here?
We hitched a lift.
Excuse me. Are you trying to tell me that we just stuck out our thumbs and some green bug-eyed monster stuck his head out and said, "Hi, fellas, hop right in. I can take you as far as the Basingstoke roundabout."
Well, the thumb's an electronic sub-ether device. The roundabout's at Barnard Star 6 light years away, but otherwise that's more or less right.
And the bug-eyed monster?
It's green, yes.
Fine. When can I go home?
You can't. Ah, found the light.
Good grief. Is this really the interior of a flying saucer?
It certainly is. What do you think?
Well, it's a bit squalid, isn't it?
What did you expect?
Well, I don't know. Gleaming control panels, flashing lights, computer screens. Not old mattresses.
Here, have a look at this.
What is it?
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's a sort of electronic book. It'll tell you everything you want to know. That's its job.
I like the cover. Don't panic. It's the first helpful or intelligible thing anybody's said to me all day.
That's why it sells so well. Here, press this button and the screen will give you the index. Now, fast wind through to V. There you are. Vogon Constructor Fleets. Now, enter that code on the tabulator and read what it says.
Vogon Constructor Fleets. Here is what to do if you want to get a lift from a Vogon. Forget it. They are one of the most unpleasant races in the galaxy. Not actually evil, but bad-tempered, bureaucratic, officious, and callous. They wouldn't even lift a finger to save their own grandmothers from the ravenous bug-blatter beast of Tral without orders signed in triplicate, sent in, sent back, queried, lost, found, subjected to public inquiry, lost again, and finally buried in soft peat for 3 months and recycled as firelighters. The best way to get a drink out of a Vogon is stick your finger down his throat. And the best way to irritate him is to feed his grandmother to the ravenous bug-blatter beast of Tral.
What a strange book. But how did we get a lift, then?
The Dentrassi let us on board.
I thought you said they were called Bogons.
Vogon.
Ah, not Dentrassi.
No, no. The Dentrassi are the in-flight caterers. Great guys. They're the best cooks and the best drinks mixers, and they don't give a wet slap about anything else. And they always help hitchhikers, partly because they like the company, but mostly because it annoys the Vogons. Which is exactly what you need to know if you're a penniless hitchhiker trying to see the marvels of the galaxy for less than 30 Altarian dollars a day.
But the book doesn't even mention them.
Ah, it's not very accurate. I'm researching the new edition. That's my job. Fun, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Unfortunately, I got stuck on the Earth for rather longer than I intended. I came for a week and was stranded for 15 years.
But how did you get there in the first place?
Oh, I got a lift with a teaser.
Teaser?
You know, rich kids with nothing to do. They cruise around looking for planets which haven't made interstellar contact yet and buzz them.
Buzz them?
Yes. They find some isolated spot, then land right by some poor unsuspecting soul whom no one's ever going to believe, and then strut up and down in front of him wearing silly antennae on their heads and making meep meep noises. Rather childish, really. Right.
What the devil's that?
It's the Vogon captain.
But I can't speak Vogon. What? Yeah.
Have a good time. Message repeat. This is your captain speaking, so stop whatever you're doing and pay attention. First of all, I see from our instruments that we have a couple of hitchhikers aboard our ship. Hello. Hello, wherever you are. I just want to make it totally clear that you are not at all welcome. I worked hard to get where I am today, and I did become captain of a Vogon constructor ship simply so that I could turn it into a taxi service for degenerate freeloaders. I have sent out a search party, and as soon as they find you, I will put you off the ship. If you're very lucky, I might read you some of my poetry first.
Secondly, we are about to jump into hyperspace for the journey to Barnard's Star. On arrival, we will stay in dock for a 72-hour refit, and no one's to leave the ship during that time. I repeat, all planet leave is cancelled. I've just had an unhappy love affair, so I don't see why anyone else should have a good time. Message ends.
Charming, these Vogons. I wish I had a daughter so I could forbid her to marry one.
You wouldn't need to. They've got as much sex appeal as a road accident. Oh, and you'd better be prepared for the jump into hyperspace. It's unpleasantly like being drunk.
Well, what's unpleasant about being drunk?
You ask a glass of water.
Ford?
Yes?
What's this fish doing in my ear?
Translating for you. Look under Babelfish in the book.
Whoa, what's happening?
We're going into hyperspace.
I'll never be cruel to a gin and tonic again.
The Babelfish is small, yellow, leech-like, and probably the oddest thing in the universe. It feeds on brainwave energy, absorbing all unconscious frequencies and then excreting telepathically a matrix formed from the conscious frequencies and nerve signals picked up from the speech centers of the brain. The practical upshot of which is that if you stick one in your ear, you can instantly understand anything sent to you in any form of language. The speech you hear decodes the brainwave matrix. Now, it is such a bizarrely improbable coincidence that anything so mind-bogglingly useful could evolve purely by chance that some thinkers have chosen to see it as a final, clinching proof of the non-existence of God. The argument goes something like this. I refuse to prove that I exist, says God, for proof denies faith, and without faith I am nothing. But, says man, the Babelfish is a dead giveaway, isn't it? It proves you exist, therefore you don't. QED. Oh dear, says God, I hadn't thought of that, and promptly vanishes in a puff of logic. Oh, that was easy, says man, and for an encore he proves that black is white, and gets killed on the next zebra crossing. Most leading theologians claim that this argument is a load of dingo's kidneys, but that didn't stop Ulan Khalufid making a small fortune when he used it as the central theme of his best-selling book, Well, That About Wraps It Up for God. Meanwhile, the poor babelfish, by effectively removing all barriers of communication between different cultures and races, has caused more and bloodier wars than anything else in the history of creation.
What an extraordinary book. Did you get much useful material on Earth?
I was able to extend the entry, yes.
Oh, let's see what it says in this edition, then.
Okay.
Let's see. E, Earth. About the code. There's the page. Oh, it doesn't seem to have an entry.
Yes, it does. Look, there at the bottom of the screen. Under Eccentrica Columbus, the triple-breasted whore of Eroticon 6.
What, there? Oh, yes. Harmless? Is that all it's got to say? One word, harmless? What the hell's that supposed to mean?
Well, there are 100 billion stars in the galaxy and a limited amount of space in the book. And no one knew much about the Earth.
Well, I hope you've managed to rectify that a bit.
Yes, I transmitted a new entry off to the editor.
Good.
He had to trim it a bit, but it's still an improvement.
What does it say now?
Mostly harmless.
Mostly harmless?
Oh, come on. I think that's pretty good coverage for a disintegrated pile of rubble.
And that's supposed to make me feel better, is it?
Shh.
What?
That.
What is it?
Well, if we're lucky, it's just the Vogons come to throw us into space.
And if we're unlucky?
The captain might want to read a sign of his poetry first.
Vogon poetry is, of course, the third worst in the universe. The second worst is that of the Asgoths of Kriya. During a recitation by their poet master, Grunthus the Flatulent, of his poem Ode to a Small Lump of Green Putty I Found in My Armpit One Midsummer Morning, four of his audience died of internal hemorrhaging, and the president of the Mid-Galactic Arts Nobbling Council only survived by gnawing one of his own legs off. Grunthus is reported to have been disappointed by the poem's reception, and was about to embark on a reading of his 12-book epic entitled Zen and the Art of Going to the Lavatory, when his own major intestine, in a desperate attempt to save the universe, leapt straight up through his neck and throttled his brain. The very worst poetry of all perished along with its creator, Paul Normal E. Milne, Smogon of Redbridge, Essex, England, in the destruction of the planet Earth. Vogon poetry is mild by comparison, but when the Vogon captain began to read, it provoked this reaction from Ford Prefect. And this from Arthur Dent.
Oh, freckled grunt bugly, thy micturations are to me as purdled gabble blotting in a lurgid bee. Grew, I implore thee, my hooting turning drones, and hoopsiously strangle me with crinkly bindle words. For otherwise, I will rend thee in the gobblewort with my burgle cunshion. See if I don't. So, earthlings, I present you with a simple choice. I was going to throw you straight out into the empty blackness of space to die horribly and slowly, but there is one way, one simple way, in which you may save yourselves. Think very carefully, for you hold your very lives in your hands. Now choose. Either die in the vacuum of space, or... Tell me how good you thought my poem was.
Oh, I thought that some of the metaphysical imagery was really particularly effective.
Yes, and interesting rhythmic devices too, which seem to counterpoint the
surrealism of the underlying metaphor.
And then die in the vacuum of space.
What?
Now, wait a minute.
I'm sorry if that seems mean, but it's the only thing I'm much good at, so I like to keep in practice.
What, writing poetry?
No, being mean. God, take them to number 3 airlock and throw them out.
No, don't worry, Arthur. I'll think of something.
I don't want to die now. I've still got a headache. I don't want to go to heaven with a headache. I'd be all cross and wouldn't enjoy it.
Ow! Ow!
Counterpoint the surrealism of the underlying metaphor. What? Death
Drink up, the world's about to end.
I like that. I always like to drink up, but not exactly pints. I like to think of more in quarts. The big girls come in quantities, of course.
Hey, Count.
And they're cross. Yes!
Put this fish in your ear.
Oh, stop that. You'll just feel silly when you get on this.
Oh, I don't know. What's in me today?
Yes, yes. Do you know that the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy continues next week with a recap of this episode, which was last week's next week's. And then we also have the third and fourth episodes coming up, which are so scary.
Oh, what a big puff of logic you are, Count.
Oh, yes. I also love the comic, Death's Too Good for Them. Now, I'll second that.
I liked the description of Earth myself. Harmless. Well, mostly harmless.
Mostly harmless. He must have seen us. Well, you know, we promised an armor break, and due to the unmentionable church service with the communion, we run out of time. Me, I like crucifixions better myself, but, you know, I'm no longer the... Oops! Open that door again! You're stopping the draft!
Oh, sorry about that.
Jeez, those bars the Lindy people are in next, and you know how they are. Anyway.
Fun.
Instead, since we don't have Ronnie, we're going to give you just a little sample of what to expect next year. Or next week, we're rapping Ronnie. Take it away, Ron.
Right, breaking campaign message to minority voters, take 37. Count it off, Mr. President.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh yeah, Lord have mercy. Now let me hear a little bass now, Nancy. So good, so fine. You're cooking now, Mama.
Thank you, dear.
Al, smoking. We're in a groove now.
That's groove, sir.
Groove, we're in a groove now. Slip me a little keyboard, Cap. Al, good God. That'd be fine. Okay, people, gotta get down. Brother Ron Reagan has hit the ground. Gotta believe he's the dude of the hour. Got the glory, got the power. Ronnie can communicate, the cat can rap. I even let Nancy sit on Mr. T's lap. Loves the needy, loves them dearly. Love to read graffiti if they'd only print it clearly. He can break. He be trying to make the big box beat. Trying to get those voters on their feet. Get their consent. All I need is 10%. Say we want on the guys pure sex. He's the man who signs your monthly welfare checks.
Ronnie's the boss. He wears the pants.
Got an open mind on civil rights.
My youngest son grew up in tights.
Check him out.
He's heavy.
Check him out.
He's cool. Lord have mercy on this syncopated fool.
Ronnie, be a legend. Ronnie, be unique.
Hard to even function with such mystique. He gets down. Loves to take to town those dancing feet. He be getting brothers off the street. Hey, at least I've tried. If only more were qualified. Say we want the cat can swing. He's the man who's often seen at Burger King. Ed, take it easy here. For gosh sakes, Ed, Debbie Boone gave me that album personally. Ed.
Everybody's scratching. Scratching for a wage. Scratch a batch of scratch. From the one hand pays. Good time scratching. Ronnie got a plan. And if that don't hatch, catch as catch can.
Okay, people, ease on through. Rappin' Ron Reagan got cheese for you. Got a big civil service that'll hire your best. And a volunteer army that'll take the rest.
Ronnie be a fighter, Ronnie will defend.
Lieutenant Bob Goodman is a personal friend.
Ronnie he be tough, Ronnie always wins.
Don't need cardboard for my shoulder spins. He can freeze. He be trying to save those suckers' souls. Trying to get those mothers to the polls.
their consent. I'll settle for just 2%. Say we want the cats. Okay, he's the man who's got more juice than Jesse J.
One more time, Mr. President. Bring it on home, sir.
Okay. Light my fire, black people. Light my fire. Give me your sweet jello. Turn on your love light. Papa got a brand new safety net for you.
Yeah.
Fresh. Chili. That be all.
Mira, nene, tú te vas para allá y vas a ganar mucho money. Te vas a hacer millonario, ¿no?